Five, four, three, two, one.
What's the situation, Captain?
Situation Fluxus, a weekly one-hour show focused in on news and conversation about jazz and improvised music, radio, and more. Thank you for joining me on today's Situation Fluxus on WGXC, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Let's dig into the headlines. Like you, I'm reading about more and more festivals that are go for this year. Fruhofer's Saratoga Jazz Festival at the Saratoga Performing Arts Center in Saratoga Springs, New York, is scheduled for June 26 and 27. Some of the performers: vocalists Diane Reeves and Cecile McLaurin-Salvant, pianist Joey Alexander, the group Artemis, and guitarist Al DiMiola. For more information, spac.org. The Berks Jazz Fest, usually held in April at various venues throughout Reading, Pennsylvania, was moved to August. The dates are August 13th through the 22nd. The lineup includes keyboardist Keiko Matsui, saxophonist Kurt Whalum and Boney James, and bassist Brian Bromberg. Special performances include Gerald Veasley's Midnight Jams and Unscripted at Berks. And on Saturday, August 21st, members of the Smooth Jazz Cruise, including bassist Marcus Miller. For more information, berksjazzfest.com. The San Jose Jazz Summer Fest in California is scheduled for August 13th through the 15th. Quote, "This outdoor fest in the heart of Silicon Valley features a wide range of jazz, often with a heavy Latin dose. Performed over 3 days at stages in the Plaza de Cesar Chavez in downtown San Jose. Performers include the Pete Escovedo Latin Jazz Orchestra, vocalist Kurt Elling with guitarist Charlie Hunter, and the 7th Street Big Band. For more information, summerfest.sanjosejazz.org. Birdland in New York City opens on July 1st. The famed jazz club, quote, is bringing back 1949 prices as a thank you to returning patrons. Performances by Birdland favorites Arturo O'Farrell and the Afro-Latin Jazz Ensemble, Jim Caruso's Cast Party, The Lineup with Susie Mosier, and David Ostwald's Louis Armstrong Eternity Band are only 99 cents when booked in advance all month long. For more information, birdlandjazz.com. The George Cables Trio performs at the Jazz Forum in Tarrytown, New York, tomorrow night, Friday, June 25th, and Saturday, June 26th, 7 and 9:30 p.m. shows. For ticket information, jazzforumarts.org. And tonight, at Live from the Jazz Forum, the vocal trio Duchess performs for free via a live stream at 7 p.m. You can stream this event from the Jazz Forum Facebook page. And orchestra leader and composer Maria Schneider is a 2021 Pulitzer Prize finalist in music for Data Lords, her double album release on Artishare from last year. From the press release, quote, Data Lords earned broad critical acclaim, including 2 Grammy Awards, Le Grand Prix de l'Académie du Jazz, the number one spot in the 2020 NPR Music Jazz Critics Poll, as well as a place as one of the year's best albums from Rolling Stone, Slate, Paste, Pop Matters, The Guardian, Chicago Tribune, Minneapolis Star Tribune, Boston Globe, Buffalo News, San Diego Union-Leader, Denver Post, jazz times, jazzes, and more. All news items have been gathered from various media sources. For the latest updates, contact the source, venue, or business. Remember, I'm just the messenger. And now, let's start off with some music.
Thank you.
We just heard from drummer Matt Slocum. His latest release on Sunnyside Records is titled Sanctuary, and we heard the title tune. Larry Grenadier on bass and Gerald Clayton on piano. The Matt Slocum Trio performs at Live at the Falcon in Marlborough, New York on Sunday, June 27th, 7 p.m. For more information, liveatthefalcon.com. Last month, I read Jeffrey Heim's article under his Paste Magazine curmudgeon column, The Golden Age of Jazz is Happening Now. He observes that jazz and improvised music is in another golden age of jazz. I've read and listened to many across the dinner table disputes that this music spiraled out after 1955 and sputtered out after 1967. Opinions, opinions. But I agree with Himes that, quote, there's never been a year without terrific new jazz albums being released, even if those records were released on tiny labels without much fanfare. Now, Blue Note and ECM Records are not what I consider small labels, but there's no disputing the talent that they've presented. Let's listen to the three groups that Himes reviewed in his article. Thank you.
Thank you.
We heard a selection from Other Worlds, the quintet release led by saxophonist Joe Lovano and trumpeter Dave Douglas. The piece, Manitou. This release is on Douglas's Green Leaf Records. Lawrence Fields is on piano, Linda May Han Oh is on bass, and Joey Barron is on drums. From pianist V.J. Iyer's second trio album on ECM Records, we listen to the piece written by Iyer, Retrofit, from the release Uneasy. Linda Mahan Oh on bass and Tyshawn Suri on drums. And from saxophonist Charles Lloyd, playing flute on his composition Dismal Swamp from Tone Poem on Blue Note Records. His wife, Dorothy Darr, not only co-produced this release, but also made the 2021 documentary Love, Longing, Loss, at home with Charles Lloyd during a year of the plague, following Lloyd during his time at their California home during the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm Cheryl Kay, and this is Situation Fluxus on WGXC, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. The success and future of the show depends partly on your feedback. Please send your feedback to thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com, info@wgxc.org, or feedback@wgxc.org. One of those interviews that took me to a place where I never thought I'd be. I had a chat with composer, pianist, flute player, and bandleader Brian Jackson. Known for his work with poet, musician, and author Gil Scott-Heron, he's just collaborated with Jazz Is Dead's Ali Shaheed Muhammad and Adrian Young for the 8th release in the Jazz Is Dead series. The release will be available on August 6th via Jazz Is Dead. Well, Brian, thank you for joining me on Situation Fluxus.
Cheryl, thank you for having me.
I want to ask you, what brought you into working with producers Ali Shaheed Muhammad and Adrian Young?
Well, first of all, it started as an invitation to do a show in Los Angeles, which I was very excited about because I hadn't actually done a solo show in Los Angeles for some time. And so they kind of roped me in with that. Also, the fact that they were working on a project and they had asked if I had wanted to be a part of it. Adrian, of course, you know, is known for his work with film, such as Black Dynamite. He also worked on the Luke Cage film. He's done a number of collaborations with several hip hop artists and has expanded, you know, just completely expanded to being an arranger, a multi-instrumentalist, a producer, all of these things. And of course, then there's Ali Shaheed Muhammad, who I consider to be one of the driving forces of A Tribe Called Quest. And the fact that they had gotten together to form a band called The Midnight Hour was intriguing to me. And I, you know, when they invited me into the studio to work with them, I thought, well, this, you know, I'm just curious, rather than anything else, kind of as a fan, I'm just curious to see what they came up with. And when I got there, instantly, just kind of an instant connection happened. And I just sat down at one of the keyboards in Adrian's studio and I started to play. And, you know, within 5 minutes, we were recording. He also had an alto flute, and I hadn't had my hands on an alto flute in several years. And, I said, what's this? I opened it up and it was an alto flute. And I just started noodling around with it on another song that he had. And I said, you know what? Let me just go in the, you know, let me just go in the studio and see what I can do with this. And 2 days later, we had an album.
What was the unexpected satisfaction of recording this release?
I think how quickly it came together. You know, the fact that we were all on the same page, it was no real necessity to talk through anything. Or, you know, there was no need for explanations or for retakes. Everything went down very smoothly and very quickly. And I know Adrian likes to work like that. And so do I, you know, because when you lose the when you lose the spontaneity, you often lose the magic. And I, you know, so we were totally, I think the three of us were totally in line with that concept. And what came out is, I think, exciting because of that reason, because it was new for all of us.
Now, what I understand is this is your first recording in about 20 years, but I suspect you've been doing other things within these 20 years. You want to run them down?
Yeah. Well, let me see. There was an album called Evolutionary Minded that was released in 2013, which featured Gregory Porter, M1, and Stickman from Dead Prez. Ayrto Moreira was on that album, as well as Mike Clark. We had some quotes from Bobby Seale. I know I'm leaving some people out because it was kind of an all-star cast, and we really enjoyed, you know, that was Martin, and of course the vocals by Martin Luther were outstanding. And what we did was we reimagined some of the songs that Gil Scott-Heron and I wrote in the 70s, and it was all put together by a young man by the name of Kentia Frazier. And by the time it was over, I was very proud of it. I'm still very proud of it. It's definitely worth giving a listen to. And coincidentally, around the same time that I started recording with Adrian and Ali Shahid, I had also begun an album with Daniel Koyas, who is one of the members of Phenomenal Handclap Band, and had produced Joe Batan's last album. And we had met at a New Blue Club, a music club in New York. And he said, I think I can produce you. And so, you know, that sounded to me like a challenge. So I took him up on it. And sure enough, you know, we definitely collaborated on a lot of material. And so that's another album that should be coming out pretty soon. There's a few things happening.
Oh, we gotta check you out.
Yeah. I've been very busy, you know, pre and post COVID. So yeah.
Would you tell us about your podcast, Pieces of a Man? You've produced 8 episodes. The first was produced on July 6, 2020. Who was your co-host, Keith Lamar? And what was the inspiration behind that podcast?
Hi, I'm Brian Jackson. In this podcast, which is really about survival, both spiritual and emotional, we look at the lies we are uncovering and the truths we are constantly discovering that help us to extract the splinters of society from our minds. This podcast is about music, justice,
and everything in between. This is Pieces of a Man.
Okay. During the pandemic, I guess maybe I didn't have enough to do. I started posting my thoughts on Instagram. And I thought, oh, this is not working for me, you know, because first of all, who's going to pay attention on Instagram to somebody, you know, just pontificating, you know, like forever? I just didn't feel like it was the right format for me to express some of the ideas I had. And so my wife floated the idea that maybe I should, you know, should do a podcast where I could have other people besides me talking. Yeah, the implication was clear. And I said, yeah, you know, good suggestion, you know. So I then started making moves towards maybe doing a podcast. And of course, the question came up is, am I just going to, you know, like rattle on over and over again, you know, over every episode, or am I going to invite guests? And of course, I had a bunch of people who I, you know, had thought about inviting as guests, but then something happened. And, you know, this could have only happened probably during the pandemic. My wife was online Googling strategies for surviving confinement. And she came across an article by a man who had written an article about it. A very insightful article. And, you know, I think it was probably, it was a good bet that he knew something about it, because he had been in solitary confinement on death row for approximately, at that time, 28 years. And just the fact that, I mean, just the fact that he had taken the time to write an article about that in order to help people who were experiencing, you know, like a temporary, maybe a month or a year, you know, however long people thought it would be, just to help people survive that brief encounter with confinement, had already touched me, you know. But when she read the article, she realized that he was a great writer, and she also noticed that he had had a book, and it was called Condemned, and it was available on Amazon. So, what she decided to do was to purchase that book, and when she got it, she just tore it apart. I mean, it, you know, look, we didn't see her for about 24 hours. And when she emerged, she said to me, "You need to read this book." And I looked at it and I was like, solitary confinement. Okay, I'll get to it. You know, I just kind of put it to the side. I was thinking I definitely wanted to read it, but I just wasn't in the frame. I just was not in the frame of mind to read that book right then. You know, it's something that she needed. And she told me that, "You really need to read this book." And I said, okay. Like maybe a couple of weeks later, I decided to pick it up, you know, because just for no other reason than, you know, just to stop her hounding me about it. And 24 hours later, I emerged and I looked in her eyes and I said, "We have to do something. We have to do something." And ordinarily, like if I had the number of followers that, say, Kim Kardashian had or something like that, I mean, you know, probably could have done something that would have been extremely effective. But I didn't. And so I started thinking about how can I bring more attention to this man's case? Because what was revealed in the book is that, yes, yeah, sure, he was imprisoned for a reason which he admitted to. And wasn't, you know, and had no problem with being imprisoned for it. It was a shooting. He, because of his, you know, situation in Cleveland, decided to pick up dealing drugs, And he was being threatened by some people that actually some friends of his, and they ambushed him in a hallway one day, and the guns came out. He drew his gun to defend himself, shot the person who had shot him. And so they both ended up in the hospital. The one that he shot died, and Keith recovered from his wounds and was tried and sent to prison. During the time that he was incarcerated, he happened to be in the place in Ohio called Lucasville State Prison, which experienced a riot about 2 or 3 years after he had been sent there. It was a bad riot, and 11 people were killed. Now, what happened after that is where the meat of the story takes place. So after all of those people were murdered, including one prison guard, several people were brought up to be charged. All of those people took plea deals, you know, because that's the way the court system is set up. You know, you take a plea deal, and then you do your time, and then you go off into the prison industrial complex, you know, because that's what it's for. Those who are naive enough to believe that when they're innocent, they can go to court to plead their case, are penalized. And so Keith, being naive and knowing that he was innocent, decided not to take a plea deal, not to say that he was guilty, because he wasn't, and to go to court. Well, wouldn't you know that during the proceedings, the prosecution had actually physically withheld evidence that his defense lawyers needed in order to prove his innocence. And it wasn't until several years later that he found out that that had been the case, that there had been, in the other trials, that there had been testimony linking all of the murders to other people, okay? But that he was not allowed to have. So in the end, many of those prisoners received, cushy, I wouldn't say cushy, you know, like job assignments, but you know, they received benefits. Keith was sent to prison for the murder of, I think, 5 of those people. Yeah, with no evidence. And, ordinarily, a situation like that would be handled by DNA. You know, people could go in but because it was a riot and the state troopers came in to settle it, they basically contaminated every piece of evidence. There were 22,000 pieces of evidence that were contaminated by them marching in. And, so places like the Innocence Project, these are organizations, many of these organizations require DNA proof, and it can't be obtained. So neither did he have the testimony of the other witnesses to exonerate him. He also had no DNA evidence to exonerate him as well, because had there been, they would have known that he was nowhere, and he was nowhere to be found when those murders occurred. Okay, so I mean, you have to read the book. I mean, it's called Condemned, yeah, it was bad. It was bad. I mean, I say that it's unbelievable. This quote unquote justice system that we have, and he's exhausted all of his remedies. And just to add insult to injury, I think it was 2014 or 2015 or so. Not only was he, had he been convicted of those crimes, he was assigned an execution date. I can tell you the date. It's November 16th, 2023. So on November 16, 2023, Keith Lamar is scheduled to be executed by the state of Ohio. And to me, this was just something that, you know, I mean, we always say, we have to do something, we have to do something. But I mean, I cannot, after having read that, it's just, I just can't sit there and just shake my head in disbelief, you know? So I started approaching some, you know, some of the artists that I knew had a little bit more reach than I did. No real response was forthcoming. And going back to my podcast, I thought, well, I think I know who I should have as my first guest. And it was Keith. And this podcast was probably one of the most amazing things that I could have ever imagined to have happened for me as a podcaster, as a new podcaster. So much so, Keith is so eloquent and so funny, you know, and so brilliant and so well-read that I just said, well, you know what? There's no need to look for anybody else. Why don't you just be my co-host? To which he agreed. And that's how it started.
My mouth is open. It's an amazing story. Amazing how that started. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Thank you. Wow. Thank you. I couldn't be more pleased with the first season. So we're going to have another episode. I think we're going to start bringing in some more guests because our conversations are very lively. And we kind of want to spread the fun around. You know, he's a very funny and engaging man. And I've enjoyed the time that we've spent together. We've become good friends as well.
You co-wrote the song Pieces of a Man with poet and musician and author Gil Scott-Heron. He was recently inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as a recipient of the Early Influence Award. I had never heard of that, but there it is. And this is a decade after his death. Can you imagine what he would have wrote about the last 4 years if he was still with us?
Yeah. And we'd be laughing a lot harder, you know. you know, and probably that's probably what we would need, what we need right now. But by the same token, we'd also, we'd be commiserating, you know, we would be, his insights, just the way that he put things, just gave you another way to look at things you already know. And this is what he was the master at, you know, that it's another perspective of the same. It's like another view of the same elephant. You know the story about the blind, you know, the three blind men touching an elephant, and everybody thought it was a different thing. Well, you know, we all feel a piece of that elephant and think it's this and think it's that. But what Gil says he thinks it is something that just changes your whole perspective of what it was that you were feeling. And that was a talent.
For more information on Brian Jackson, brianjackson.net. And thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM. Listener-supported radio for open ears. I've been your host, Cheryl Kay. Tune in next Thursday at 11 a.m. for another show. I also host The Jazz Disturbance on the first, second, third, and fifth Sunday of each month from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. The success and future of the show depends partly on your feedback. Please send your comments, quips, anecdotes, as well as feedback to thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com, info@wgxc.org, or feedback@wgxc.org. the WGXC 90.7 FM Pledge Drive is happening now through June 28th. Please make your tax-deductible donation at wgxc.org/donate and help keep community radio on the airwaves. That's wgxc.org/donate. Thank you.